Every time we start taped, I have to have a moment.
Deep sea fishing, nothing comes up.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it.
I'm not the holdup here.
Well,
it
you.
Is very uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do. I got all flustered.
All right, come on, Joel.
Scrap all that.
We're going to get fired before we start. All right, go ahead. Hi, I'm Maria Bruno, Head of U.S. Wealth Planning Research here at Vanguard.
And I'm Joel Dixon, Global Head of Advice Methodology at Vanguard. Welcome to our podcast series, The Planner and the Geek, in which we will discuss topics that are important to individual investors.
And we'll have some fun along the way.
Hey, Maria, let's talk birthdays.
Okay, let's.
When's yours?
Coming up.
Coming up. Mm-hmm. Well, one's always coming up, right? I mean, I think you're like me. You have one every year?
I do have one every year, but let's talk about the one you just had not that long ago.
Yeah. I did have one. It was a big one.
Was it your annual 39th birthday?
Yeah, for the 12th consecutive year. So, I'm just putting, you know, that number on my cake now of candles. So it was 12 candles this year. So, yeah, no, so I turned 50.
Well, happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you. Hey, there are benefits to it. I mean, not a lot of physical benefits. I'm thinking financial benefits to it.
Did you get your AARP card?
Ooh. Actually, I didn't.
Oh, that's one you need to do.
Yeah, well.
Being as frugal as you are on certain things, I'm surprised.
I would have thought
that. You get that discount card.
I didn't get it in the mail. I actually, well, or I don't know. These days I tend to not even check my mailbox regularly.
All right, well,
so
put that on your financial to-do list.
To get my AARP card? Did you make your IRA contribution yet? We talked about that in the last episode. Have you still not made it?
All right, we need to move on from my IRA contribution. So I think today what we want to talk about is this notion of retirement readiness, right? Not that,
yeah.
Not that I'm implying that you're headed there anytime soon.
You just want me to be
headed there. We're willing
you
to get there. But so what happened? You turned 50. You had a big birthday.
I did. And I actually was able to, although now the retirement concepts are becoming a little more real. I do have to admit that. But, you know, there are some benefits and financial benefits. I was able to contribute more to my retirement plan here at Vanguard and to my IRA contribution.
So you took advantage of the catch-up provisions.
Yes, catch-up where I can do an extra amount, $6,000, up to $6,000,
okay,
in
good.
401k
yep.
plan, and an extra $1,000 for my IRA contributions.
All right, good.
By the way, you know how catch-up contributions started, right, Maria?
No.
They were actually, it was the brainchild of some people at the Heinz Corporation. They were like, hey, we need to make catch-up contributions. So it just kind of stuck and now has been, you know, throughout. Yeah, ba-dum-bum. Yeah,
what
I got it.
What changes to your financial planning, if any, did you make? Right, so catch-up contributions is the big one. And that's an important one because actually some of the research that we've seen here at Vanguard is that we find that some IRA investors actually don't take advantage of that. When we look at trends in terms of how investors are making their contribution choices, we see a little dip at age 50 and then it goes back up. So that leads us to think that...
I'm sorry, a little dip in...
In the level of contributions, meaning they're not contributing the max. So those investors that are contributing the maximum amount that they can,
yep.
in the year they turn 50, what we're seeing is that they're contributing the 5,500. They're not contributing the max. And then the following year, they go back and do the max limit amounts.
I wonder if that has to do with a little bit of confusion on the rule, because it's not that you can't contribute until you're 50. It's that you can start that extra catch-up contribution in the year that you turn 50. So my birthday's in July, and I actually started making those contributions, the additional catch-up contributions, starting in January of last year.
No, I think it is. I think it's an awareness. And it's an extra $1,000 in the IRA, more in the 401k. From a savings standpoint, it's a good move. Anything else? Did you think about your asset allocation, for instance?
I thought about it, but ultimately, did anything change from the time that I was 49 and 364 days and I turned 50? And I go, well, my time horizon of my investments hasn't really changed much. There wasn't a life change that created a different risk profile for me. So from that standpoint, I didn't really think that much of an asset allocation change was needed in terms of thinking about what I might do. I would say, as I'm thinking about different aspects of, you know, getting ready for retirement down the road, I would say there's some clarity that's coming, and I'm starting to get a better sense of what type of spending might continue or might what kind of income I might need with a little bit more certainty. Well, it becomes a little more real when you actually start thinking about, now, how much do I spend? How do I spend it? What will I spend on in retirement versus what I won't?
Well, it's interesting that you went right there, because when I think about it and when I think about turning 50-ish,
oh,
with the emphasis on the ish.
Ish. Oftentimes that ish tends to be when you're above the target. Like, my weight is always a lower number.
Oh, not
with
in this case.
Ish.
No, yes.
So, okay. So we're talking about ish as being lower than. Okay.
Correct. Yes. Thanks for clarifying that. I've actually started thinking more around, what do I want my retirement to look like?
Okay.
And it's interesting that you...
I'd love some ideas here.
So, you know, as you start thinking through that, your perspective changes a little bit as the milestone nears, and you start thinking about, well, what do I want to do and when and what would I need to accomplish that? You seem to go right into the number crunching in terms of understanding.
I'm the geek, right?
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, it's not uncommon. And I, you know, field a lot of questions from individuals who are facing retirement. And often they ask, well, you know, how do I know when I have enough? What's my number? Or individuals go right into this number crunching without even fully thinking through, well, what do I want retirement to be? What does this look like? And then go through and say, okay, well, do I have enough to sustain that goal?
Well, that's the thing that often we're bombarded with, is how much do you need to retire? You know, it's this number game. And actually, it's funny, because I actually don't think about it that way. I think about how much income can I sustain from all various sources, because there are lots of different sources. It's not just an investment portfolio. It's how much Social Security or, you know, other forms of income that might be there.
Yes,
how much am I going to work versus not?
Right, because the definition of retirement is different. So you might... stop your full-time job, for instance, but you may not start claiming Social Security until age 70, for instance. So retirement is a broad term. How you spend your time throughout that period is one thing, but then also what your income flows and outflows are another thing. So it's not once and done, or nothing just magical happens once you retire. It's actually more of a journey throughout.
Completely agree.
Throughout a time period.
Yeah, it's that. It is. I mean, you're right, from the standpoint of what do I want my retirement to look like? And then back into, well, what does that mean to have a sustainable lifestyle or whatever in that scenario?
Yeah, and the other thing too is, for individuals that are married or with partners, you need to really have that conversation together. I have a situation of a family friend where he took an early retirement. He wants his wife to retire. She has no plans to retire. And, you know, they're having some decision-making around that, how, in terms of how he spends his time, and she has no intention to retire in the next couple of years. So it's an interesting dialogue.
That's actually a key difference between sort of the planning aspect of it and kind of the number-crunching aspect, as you said. I mean, a lot of times financial planning isn't necessarily just the financial plan itself. It's the counseling and awareness and goals discovery and communication piece
right.
of it, right?
It's the discussion piece, defining what the goal is first and foremost, and then determining, do you have the financial plan to support that? And actually, I mean, would you agree? I think the definition of retirement is changing. Whereas in the past, individuals might retire and not, quote unquote, work anymore. I think what we're seeing is individuals who may be leaving the workforce and their career, but maybe transitioning into a consulting job or a part-time position, whether they have opted to do that or maybe they're even forced to do that, but it may be changing.
Yeah, I've seen recent academic research about flexibility in retirement and what that might look like, and actually that even more people would work in retirement if there was more flexibility. I think it's a really interesting thing, too, because as longevity has increased, and, you know, some would say is likely to continue to increase. I mean, some of these folks that like to make projections say, hey, you know, what if the average life expectancy is 100 years, 120 years, you know, something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And then the resources to sustain that longer life expectancy are quite different as
right.
well, too, and there's implications there. Can we talk a little bit more around asset allocation? Because this is a question that we get time and time again. And it ties into a lot, as it does with investing broadly. But as you think about nearing retirement and then in retirement, the question of, well, how should I be allocated? What role do equities play? They still play a role. When you think about rules of thumb around withdrawal rates, right? How much can I withdraw from my portfolio? Even the research that we do here at Vanguard, it's all predicated upon a balanced portfolio, anywhere between 40 to 60% in a globally diversified equity portfolio. So equities play a role, particularly as life expectancy increases. But with that comes that comfort with being able to withstand some market volatility along the way.
Yeah, there's so much that goes into it. I mean, too often we hear comments that, well, I'm going to retire at age 65, and people then start talking about their portfolio as if 65 is the day they die. You know, and it's not, right? You know, the retire at age 65, you may be living another 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, actually, the median at age 65 of a male in the U.S. is about 18 years. So if you're 65, it's somewhere around, you know, your mid-80s.
Yeah, and I think for married couples, for 65-year-olds today, isn't there a 1 in 50% chance that at least one of the couple will live to age 90?
Yeah, just about that. So, I mean, you've got just sort of the income, and you might think about this in different ways, too, right? There's how much do I need to sort of not be a burden? You know, it's sort of the day-to-day living expenses. And then how much do I want to have fun with? How much do I need to think about, you know, extraordinary expenses like, well, maybe we do need a new roof, or, you know, we have a healthcare expense that was unexpected. Well, how much for long-term care? I mean, that's an issue. So there are any number of components that come into play in the planning process there.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, it doesn't necessarily have to change at age 50. It doesn't necessarily have to change at age 55 or 60. You know, we as investors need to think about what our goals are and what our resources are to meet those goals and how we're allocated. You know, I have to be honest, we've been in a very strong bull market since 2009. We've had some market volatility this year that we've seen that may make some investors uncomfortable. But the reality of it is the conversations we were having up to this point is make sure you rebalance your portfolio to make sure that you're not taking on too much equity risk and that your asset allocation is aligned to meet your goals. So for those investors, perhaps, who haven't been diligent about rebalancing, then yeah, they may be overexposed and be a little bit too much stock heavy. And that's where some of the discomfort may come. But, you know, for those investors who are properly allocated, they shouldn't necessarily have to do anything if they're invested in a diversified portfolio with long-term goals.
There's a investment professional years ago that used to say that the mind isn't the most important organ for investing. It's actually the stomach. And, you know, can you handle the volatility, the ups and downs? And that, I think, is the good sign, which is that if market volatility is causing you to rethink your asset allocation, maybe it's the case you didn't have the right asset allocation in the first place.
Right.
We find that a lot of engagements with financial advisors, and getting back to this sort of coaching or piece around consulting with the client about goals discovery and so forth.
You were
going to
say marriage counseling.
I was going to say counseling. Yeah, I was. I stopped myself. But those elements of a financial planning or a financial advisor sort of engagement in many ways can be as valuable or more than actually building what the investment portfolio is. But it's like, okay, so the market's down 10%, but I'm still on track for my goal. So, you know, don't go tweaking everything, you know, just because you got this nervousness about that. The ultimate outcome, not what's the ultimate dollars in the account.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, and I think it segues nicely into a discussion that we want to have today. We recently sat down with our friend at Morningstar, Christine Benz,
who's one of your favorite people.
Unlike
your co-host.
I do like working with Christine a lot. She's the director of personal finance at Morningstar. And I've had the opportunity to work with her, as you have as well. And she just really gives really good counsel to investors, a lot of good practical tips. So we sat down with her and we talked about this notion of turning 50 and this retirement readiness. And a lot of what came down to was understanding what your goals are. And one of the things that she did, and she blogged about this last year, was she took a faux-tirement. So at Morningstar, she'll explain.
Kind of like this is a faux podcast?
Yeah, she took a retirement for a test run. So, you know, I think there's some neat perspective, and we're going to take a listen to what Christine had to say when she was in the studio with us recently. Christine, thanks for joining us here today. We're happy to have you.
Oh, Marie, I'm honored to be here with both of you.
You may not know this, but Joel had a milestone birthday this year.
Oh?
Yeah. 39.
Again,
29.
Again.
Whatever nine you want to that's less than 40 or maybe 50 in my case.
Happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you, Christine. It's been wonderful.
So, Christine, what are your thoughts? You spend a lot of time counseling individuals throughout their investing horizon. So I know you, like me, we take lots of questions around, you know, as you get closer to retirement. What's the checklist? What are the things that really you need to focus on as you get closer?
Yeah, well, 50 to me, if we're using that as the milestone, is kind of too early in most situations to really think about positioning a portfolio for retirement. But I think it does make sense, you know, once you sort of get within 10 years of retirement, to certainly think about taking down risk in the portfolio. But even at age 50, you should still be thinking about having a healthy complement of safer securities in your portfolio. You need plenty of stock exposure for sure, but you'd probably want to think about backing off some of the risk in your portfolio.
Well, actually, Maria's hoping I'm going to retire within the next 3 years, so it may. Yeah,
I okay. said no such thing.
Actually, it's funny because here at Vanguard, I'm actually now technically retirement eligible in terms of getting full benefits because we have a kind of 50 and 15 years of service type test, so. I keep telling Maria, you know, one wrong word and I'm out of here. She takes that as actually a challenge.
So I think when we think about 50, it's because it is a milestone of being retirement eligible in our world. But
okay.
I think you're right. Turning 50, there's nothing necessarily magical about it. The catch-up contributions, certainly from a financial planning standpoint, are one thing, another tool in your toolbox.
Right, right.
That anyone really should be taking advantage of.
Absolutely. And, you know, many people, when they've seen their portfolios go up and up and up, thanks to gains in the stock market, there is this tendency to leave well enough alone and to not mess with things that seem to be working. And the tricky part of that strategy is that you're 8 years older than when this whole thing started, than when stocks began to recover. And that means that you probably do want to, if you haven't done anything, take a little bit of risk off the table and potentially peel back on stocks and add to safer securities.
So I guess I'm not following the first thing on the checklist. Wait, let's do the to-do piece.
You're doing the catch-up contributions.
Yeah, I'm definitely doing the catch-up contributions, but I still have the same asset allocation I've had my entire working career. So now part of that gets to what's the goal for retirement in some respects too, right? I mean, I don't see myself spending down every last dollar of assets in retirement. So there's a significant legacy sort of component to a whether charitable work, whether to relatives and so forth. That keeps me with a little bit of a higher allocation just sort of naturally to risky assets.
Because you don't think you'll spend it all.
No,
yeah. So it is individual specific, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, absolutely.
The reality is most people won't be in that situation where they'll have way more than they need. So people who do expect to spend a fair share of their portfolio, if not all, should be thinking about getting more conservative.
Christine, what are your thoughts? Joel and I talk a lot about traditional deferred contributions versus Roth contributions. So when you think about individuals in, you know, our life stage, probably a good amount has been accumulated within traditional deferred accounts. Roths are relatively new to the landscape. But here's a situation where, you know, you're still working. You can be pretty thoughtful in terms of whether you direct your contributions to traditional versus Roth. What are your thoughts there really around creating that tax diversification at this point?
Yeah, I think it's really valuable. In fact, Joel, I think you were the one who so many years ago put this tax diversification concept on my radar. The idea of even if you don't, you know what your tax rate in retirement will be relative to what it is today, and who does really, unless retirement's a couple years away. But even if you don't know that, you still want to come into retirement without all of your assets that will be fully taxable upon withdrawal, which is the case with those traditional tax deferred assets. So I do think that for people who have accumulated most of their retirement savings within the confines of some sort of traditional tax deferred account, for the sake of just giving yourself a little bit of flexibility in retirement to not have to take required minimum distributions from the account, to have some withdrawals coming out tax-free, I think the Roth contributions can make sense. I know ever since Morningstar added its Roth option to the 401k plan, I've been fully funding that. And of course, my matching contributions go into
pre-tax.
Yeah. But I've been grateful to see my Roth balance creeping up right alongside my traditional tax-deferred, which I had been initially funding before we got the Roth option. Another thing that I think high-income folks ought to think about if it's an option within their company retirement plan are the after-tax 401k contributions. And not all plans have them. I don't know, but I don't think it's very typical for 401k plans to have them. But for those that do, for people who have kind of think that they've maxed out all of the available receptacles for tax-sheltered savings, that might be another idea.
What are your thoughts or what are the key things for those of us who are approaching that stage in terms of how do you know when you're ready and what are some of the tools in your toolbox that you should be focusing on while you're still working once you've determined what your goals are?
Yeah, you know, I think this issue of retirement readiness is, you know, some people constrain it too tightly to financial matters. And really, there are so many other things that go into the idea of being retired, you know, sort of thinking about what you want your retirement to look like, what your goals are, whether you continue to work in some capacity. And that's the reality for so many people today. It's not like they hang it up altogether. Most people do continue to work in some capacity, whether it is paid work or whether it's some sort of community work. It seems like most people do continue to do something that they find meaningful above and beyond kind of the traditional leisure activities that people have long associated with retirement.
Well, and Christine, you had a little bit of a dipping of your toe into the retirement sort of goal and how you might envision it recently with a sabbatical that you took, and you wrote about it. Kind of what did you learn from that for yourself and your own thinking around the retirement?
You know, it was such a great experience. Morningstar offers these sabbaticals to people. If you've been at the company for 4 years, you get the 6-week sabbatical. And you can do anything you want with the time. And so my husband and I went on a trip, but then I had 4 weeks just at home. And that was what really got me thinking about this concept of, I called it faux-tirement, this idea of what will retirement feel like for me? And, you know, I had some interesting takeaways from it. One was how even though I wasn't working or obligated to be at work in any way, I did find that my best days were days when I got something done in addition to whatever fun stuff I did on that day. So that balance for me, I think, will have to be part of my retirement equation, whether it's working in some capacity or doing some sort of community service work, but definitely feeling like I'm doing something that is valuable, meaningful, and also doing those things helped me enjoy my free time that much more.
And Christine, I thought that was great. I reread your blog this morning to prepare for our discussion today. I just thought it was great. I think you brought up a lot of good points and food for thought around this faux-tirement. So I had a couple questions for you. One of the things that you had noted in the article was that you found your work expenses went down, but then other expenses maybe went up because I think you went to Target a little too much.
I did. I went out to lunch a lot, too, which I really loved because, you know, there are a lot of times during a normal work week where you don't have time for a 2-hour lunch with friends. So it was kind of my after lunch ritual. I would go like to Target or something like that. And yeah, so it changed.
But it makes you think in terms of what you're spending your money on today versus what it would look like going forward when you don't have those work-related expenses, but there's other things that you might want to do, and expenses maybe in leisure or some other things might ratchet up a bit.
That's right. And clothing expenses are another category where, you know, I would open my closet and be like, oh my God, there, see this whole, you know, a lot of clothes related to work, none of which I was wearing. And then all of the clothes I needed, it was summer when I was on the sabbatical. So I was like working out a lot, walking a lot, in my garden a lot. Those were always in the laundry. And I realized if I were going to keep doing this, that I would need more of that stuff and certainly less of that other wardrobe. So clothing expenses, I seem to be more interested in spending money on the house because I was there more, I guess. So I was noticing things like, oh, I want to buy a new dish strainer or some summer pillows.
Well, that was your need to go to Target.
Yeah, the problem, though, with those, I find Target, Costco, whatever it is along those lines, you go in with one thing, you come out $150 later.
Or $300 later, yeah.
It's just like, wait, what happened here?
Yeah.
That's not what I was planning. That's the biggest retirement risk in
some
ways.
You need that big Marcona almond container and all the other things, yes.
So that bleeds into, though, your colleague David Blanchett has done work around the spending smile.
Yes.
Right, in retirement. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think you're touched upon that a bit here in your faux-tirement, do you think?
Yeah, David's research is really interesting. And to me, it syncs up with the experience that I've had with older adults in my life who have gone through retirement. But David Blanchett, who is head of retirement research for Morningstar Investment Management, calls it the retirement spending smile. And so his observation, and this is looking at real data about retirees, is that the early retiree years, so, you know, just after you retire at 65 or whenever that might be, tend to be the higher spending years in many retirees' plans. And that is because, you know, maybe they have pent-up demand to do stuff with their money, whether it's travel or other leisure activities. Maybe they're golfing a couple times a week, whatever it might be. Those are the high spending years, kind of from 65 to maybe early to mid 70s. Then the spending actually declines a little bit, according to David's data. And that too, you know, that's sometimes been called the go-go, go-slow pattern. So you think about people, and certainly this is a huge generalization. You've got a lot of very healthy 75-year-olds out there. But in David's research, he shows that spending tends to dip, expenses tend to dip in kind of those middle retirement years where maybe the idea of heavy travel isn't super appealing. Maybe somebody's got health issues going on. And then spending increases again later in life, often due to increases in healthcare-related spending or long-term care-related spending. So that's the general pattern that he's observed.
I just have one last question on Christine's faux-tirement.
Which, by the way, we keep talking about this faux-tirement
right up our blog. I'm going to go get a trademark first.
Yeah, I think you should. But this is on Morningstar's website, right?
That's right.
You wrote that
Morningstar.com blog.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Christine, you're married, and your husband doesn't work at Morningstar, does
he?
So he doesn't
have a
sabbatical. So did he do his faux-tirement yet?
No, but how much did it match up?
Or marry up, right? Did you guys marry up what your goals are, right? Because this is a really real issue in that you've got married couples. I know when I was working with clients is you have one spouse who has a vision and the spouse, but no, that's not what I had intended.
You know, we're generally on the same page in terms of lifestyle considerations. The one thing is, though, I think he has talked about retiring at a more or less traditional retirement age, whereas I love what I do and I could see myself working at it in some capacity past traditional retirement age. So that's where we maybe have a little bit of a divergence, and we're going to have to see how that pans out, whether me being able to work syncs up with like his vision for how much we'll travel, for example. So that'll be a work in progress. We still have a little ways to go before we're there. But definitely, I think it's helpful to have that dialogue to make sure that spouses have at least semi-compatible visions about what their retirements will look like.
Well, Christine, thank you very much for joining us. It's been great. We always enjoy talking with you, and you do such great work for not just the industry as a whole, but for all of the clients, Vanguard clients included, through your work at Morningstar.
Well, thank you both. It's been a real treat to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine.
Yeah, listening to Christine, I think I'm going to just put this faux-tirement thing into my vernacular going forward.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Have you thought about it? What would you do if you had 6 weeks off?
If I had 6 weeks off, that's very different than what I would think about from a retirement standpoint. But if I had 6 weeks off, I would do some travel. I'd love to go, hiking in, New Zealand or Australia and, spend sort of 6 weeks kind of decompressing and doing that with really no care in the world, if you will, from that standpoint. But that's different than having a 6 year or a 20-year or something like that retirement, because I kind of see 6 weeks as vacation.
Okay, but Christine took that period of time as
a test run
to say, okay, well, this is making me think, how would I spend my time?
Yeah, I think I'd prioritize. I'd love to go do some things that I haven't done yet and treat it more like a vacation standpoint. So if I were to do a faux-tirement, I would actually go back and do some more education, schooling-type things to... Because there's some things I think are kind of neat and I'd like to think about building that I might be able to do. I'd learn a little bit more technology stuff to be able to build my own, I don't know. But something along those lines that I would do.
Yeah, it's funny because I had thought about it as well. And I thought, if I had 6 weeks off, my
thought was, oh, I'd hit the open road. I'd go out with Guy Fieri and just hit all those triple D's and go out and have a food fest.
Does Guy know that?
Well, no, I thought about it, but I wouldn't do anything for his ratings, so I figured he wouldn't take me up on that. And then I thought, well, no. You know, instead of taking the car, take an RV. And then that led me to this whole
That's a trend.
It is.
It is.
And Christine and I actually talked about this because I always see, and it's usually with couples, it's the wife that always writes in to say, what happens when your husband wants to sell a house and go into an RV, but I want to spend time with the grandkids. So it's always the wife who's kind of bringing up this husband and RV notion. But here's a fun fact, because you know I enjoy my fun facts.
Okay.
What's the average or the typical age of a RV owner?
Typical age of an RV owner. I'm going to guess 63.
Ugh, not even close. So according to that Recreational Vehicle Industry Association, because there is one.
Yeah.
The average age is 48 years old. Doesn't that make you think? And then I'm like, oh, maybe I should.
So in other words, somebody who's 50-ish is the person that's buying.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I got it.
Anyway, I just thought that was fun because the RV always tends to come up. But I thought about it differently. I'm like, okay, well, if I had 6 weeks, yes, I'd go have some fun. I maybe do some travel. I do some organizational stuff, much like Christine did. But if you're thinking about a trending towards retirement, it's like, oh, okay, well, if I have more time and maybe the financial means, I might do some other things in terms of maybe a little bit of a second career or, like you said, going back and either taking on some new skill sets or things like that. So it's interesting.
We've spent a lot of time talking in this episode about kind of that retirement readiness from a 50-ish perspective.
Yeah.
But retirement readiness is really for anyone at any time to think about, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it can be. When you think about what you're saving for, most individuals, the big rock is saving for retirement. So naturally, as you get closer to retirement, stakes are higher, your time horizon is shorter, it becomes much more real. How you plan for that is different. When you're younger, the message there is to save.
Yeah, you may not know what it looks like 20, 30 years, 40
years
from now.
No, and so we talked about, you know, replacement ratios, for instance. You can't talk about replacement ratios for somebody who may be 10 plus away, years away from retirement, because it's not really meaningful. So for younger investors, it could be financial independence. It could be wealth accumulation, like those types of things.
Right, and not trying to put too fine a point on it, because ultimately things are going to change a lot, but, you know, having that base of, you know, if you save 10% or 15% or something like that off the top, and, you know, at least you're setting yourself up to be
I think it's an understanding of making retirement a priority and make sure that you start a disciplined savings program earlier. The one thing maybe we could leave our listeners with is, you know, we covered some information, but as you get closer to this decision making around when to actually retire or taking a step back and understanding what retirement actually will look like, how can you go about doing that, right? So there's tools, there's calculators, there's content on Vanguard.com and other news sites or financial sites, but it may be time to actually work with an advisor or a professional to really to, you know, once you understand what that looks like, to do some number crunching. Because while you're still working, you can make some changes to help make those goals more achievable rather than after you retire, for instance.
I would say, you know, in a, you know, household partnership situation, I would actually suggest, if one of the two are listening to this podcast, maybe sit down, you know, tonight or later and, you know, hey, what does retirement look like if you're getting close to that pace? And start that goal discovery process on your own, because in many ways that's going to determine how you think about whether there do need to be changes to the portfolio and the allocation.
Yeah, or you may be pleasantly surprised that, oh, no, we've been working for our, you know, our adult lives is actually achievable and we're on the same page. And that could be a welcome surprise to some couples. So
exactly.
All right. Well, thanks, Joel. I think it's been fun.
Why, yes, Maria, it has been fun. Just, again, want to thank our listeners. Look forward to our listeners joining us again for the next episode of The Planner and the Geek.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Planner and the Geek. Just a reminder that you can find more episodes of The Planner and the Geek on iTunes and on Vanguard.com.
Or simply subscribe to our series and you won't miss an episode. And please don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Your ratings will make it easier for others to find us when they're looking for investing podcasts. Please join us next time for another episode of The Planner and the Geek.
Please remember that all investments involve some risk. Be aware that fluctuations in the financial markets and other factors may cause declines in the value of your account. There is no guarantee that any particular asset allocation or mix of funds will meet your investment objectives or provide you with a given level of income. Diversification does not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. All investing is subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. We recommend that you consult a tax or financial advisor about your individual situation. Copyright 2018, The Vanguard Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved.